Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is the Zero Point Show through BBS Radio. It is Saturday, March 31st, 2012. I'm coming to you from Ottawa, Canada area, and my co-host, Dee, who I'll bring on in a few minutes, is from the Toronto, Canada area. The original aim of
this service is provided.
I'm not sure what that it was. The meaning of zero point, it's a term that I took from H.P. Blavatsky, and it's in her book on The Secret Doctrine. And one concept in The Secret Doctrine, in Book 1, which deals with cosmogenesis, meaning the creation or origin of the universe or cosmos. And one of the concepts in The Secret Doctrine is that living beings have an original first point. And in a way, that's the first zero point. And Blavatsky sometimes calls it a Leia center. And she says the first point can be considered as the first point of emergence of some living cosmos. And it's analogous in modern physics. They trace our universe back to a singularity at the beginning of time. And they think our universe emerged from a point 10 to the minus 33 centimeters, which is an incredibly small point source. So Blavatsky explained the same concept in 1888. And a century later, physics arrived at the same idea of the universe as emerging from a first point or a zero point. When I say a zero point, I mean a point so small that it appears to us as zero. In a way, it's beyond our level of perception. So that's the concept of a zero point. And we find that in Blavatsky, and then now we find it in modern physics, and people talk about what they call the zero-point fields, because in modern physics, they realize that the quantum vacuum has a structure to it. It's very complex, and that there are different zero-point fields latent in the quantum vacuum. So anyway, the concept of a zero-point can represent I would say it represents your I in the living being. Like in modern science, scientists don't think that the individual has a unique I. And by when I say I meant spelt the letter capital I. Like we don't think there is a singular I in the human being. Instead, as Francis Crick, a famous scientist, says, we're basically just a pack of neurons. Okay, so we're composed of all these cells and particles, but there is no individual I or unique I element in the human being. Whereas in the mystical teachings, what they suggest is that each human being does have an individual I, and there's different terms for this I and different explanations. In Kabbalah, it's explained before creation occurs, Adam, or the original man, is like a crystal. And when creation occurs, that crystal shatters, and it gives you all these sparks of holiness. Okay, so in Kabbalah, you have this concept of sparks of holiness. In the Bhagavad Gita, we find that Lord Krishna says, I am the Self seated in the hearts of all living beings. So in the Gita, the concept is of the I emerging from the heart. And the spiritual self is described as infinitesimal. It's like a point source of that supernal light. Blavatsky calls such an element a monad. And for Blavatsky, behind human existence is this divine spark or a monad that exists in hyperspace dimensions. So in my work through the years, I've attempted to study the kind of science of mystical teachings and looking at such concepts as these in regards to understanding human consciousness. What I think is my most important book is called The Heart Doctrine, and it explains how modern science has assumed the head doctrine, which is that the mind in the head produces human consciousness, or the brain in the head. Whereas in mystical teachings, the self is identified as being associated with the heart rather than the head. So the idea in mystical teachings, the self-realization, is defined as the dissolution of the false mind into the lotus of the heart. So these are some of the concepts that we've explored through the past years on the Zero Point Show, talking about the heart doctrine and the issues of consciousness, and then trying to understand some of these zero-point concepts. Also through the years, back in 2006, I had a rather rude awakening myself when I woke up to really what was going on in our society and the, in a way, very epic times that I think we live in. Because of the criminality, the extent of the criminality being perpetrated around the world, and the serious threats, multiple serious threats to the health and well-being of planetary citizens. I think we're in an epic time, and a dangerous time, and yet also a time which has here and there, there are sparks of hope or possibilities of change. We'll have to see how it all unfolds. And I've come to see this all as, in a way, it's a big story. It's like, I guess, God's story about what happened to the humankind on this planet, where we descended into arch-criminality. In a way, at every level of our society, there's been a degradation of human society and human beings. And in a way, I'm definitely a conspiracy theorist now, because there's all kinds of conspiracies. How can someone not be a conspiracy? Conspiracy means conspire, has to breathe, it means to breathe together. And criminals do. They conspire. They breathe together in private and plan deviant acts which are being perpetrated. And we know the globalist agenda has been advanced around the world through decades now, if not centuries. And it's been done piecemeal, like in a way, it's been done so the people haven't discerned the overall pattern, at least most of us. Even today, the masses of humankind are completely asleep to all the lies of what we're told through the corporate media and the education and so on, major social influences. So in a way, humankind is asleep. And yet, at the same time, we see more and more people around the planet waking up and seeing the overall patterns of what's being done in our societies. And people are beginning to wake up and realize, wow, we better wake up more and learn more and come together with other people to try to change this course of events. And so I see, in a way, I view life now, we're involved in this kind of epic story of, you know, essentially the kind of forces of good and evil upon this planet. It's hard to conceive at times the wickedness of the globalist corporate agenda and the tragedy of all that's been done. So anyway, so we explore both these kind of mystical teachings of modern science and looking at what's happening in our society and bring on guests who can address some of the issues related to this crisis on this planet. About a month ago, I invited a new co-host onto the show. Jim had been with me for a few years, and we focused more on discussing the mystical teachings. Jim, as people who are familiar with the show would know, he has a very different view than I do. He doesn't think there's a kind of globalist plan, an organization among the elites. And in a way, Jim and I had very strong divergent views on that subject. And we focused more on mystical teachings. But Jim has taken the hiatus from the show for a while, and we have a new co-host, and I invited Dee initially because she's active in Canada in the area of health freedoms, and I get daily mailings from Dee of all these different issues up in the news as pertain to health freedom and other major events going on in our society. So, I'd like to invite Dee. Dee, how are you?
I'm very well, Christopher, and thanks again for this opportunity to speak to people. You're right. You know, I am active in the health freedom area. I'm the executive director of the National Health Federation of Canada. But the thing is that freedom is not confined to any particular area. At this point in time, what we see in the world is that all our freedoms are evaporating. I just read an article today that stated that there have been in the United States alone 40,000 new laws introduced just in the last little while. I mean, we're talking just in the last little while. I'm thinking it's if I can recall, it's something like in the last year. And so these are laws and statutes that are and regulations that are being put in place at every level of our society. And I'll tell you, the thing that has bothered me the most is an article that I just read stating that in many cities across the United States, starting with Sin City, Las Vegas, they were the first in America to declare it a crime to feed the homeless.
Yeah.
So now you've got major cities all over the states who are saying you cannot distribute water to the homeless. New York has decided that none of the government-run agencies to feed the homeless can take donations of food from Good Samaritans. In other words, if a corporation says, hey, listen, you know, how'd you like it if we provided you with 100,000 pounds of food? Well, because the New York government says they can't monitor the nutritional quality of the food, they can't accept the donations. Now, I've never heard such a pile of crap in my life, quite frankly. And if anybody, I think, tried to enforce anything like that in Toronto or anywhere I lived, I would be one of the first to violate the law. I happen to be on the board of Love Cry, which is a street kids organization helping homeless people. I've been on that board for over 15 years. So, you know, this to me is anathema. When you, you know, we know in the health freedom industry, we know that what Hippocrates said thousands of years ago was correct. He said, let food be thy medicine and let medicine be thy food. That was his directive from the founder of modern medicine. Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time as the New York government is saying we can't monitor nutrition, do they know how to monitor dead people? Because you know what? Even if the food isn't perfectly nutritious, people still need to eat. They still need to eat. People are surviving on bowls of rice daily elsewhere in the world, and they have the temerity, to take food away from helpless people. Now, I would also point out that there are over 100,000 veterans of U.S. aggression on the street mm-hmm. in the United States as we speak. So the very people, 100,000 of them, that they're saying, oh, no, you don't deserve food, they're veterans.
Yeah.
So what kind of a horror is that? That America is turning into a place, as you were mentioning earlier, that the depth of depravity of what's going on in this world is enough to just turn your stomach. If you have any humanity in you at all, it's enough to turn your stomach. Because the very people who are being squashed the most by this repressive regime that is spreading like an octopus around the world, okay, they're the ones that need the help the most. And the ones that didn't need help all of a sudden need help. Our middle class is disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, people are talking about the biggest economic bubble of all time popping, starting to pop. Well, who's going to suffer the most? The very people who are at the bottom of the food chain, the very people who are at the bottom, the ones we should care for the most, the ones who are disabled by the very society that now refuses to feed them. You know, this is the thing that's blowing me away, that more people are not standing up and saying, wait a minute, we can't live like this.
And seeing it, the whole pattern of it, like some, I mean, just to go back, like this is a shocking number of new laws. And as you say, it's like they want to create all these statutes and regulations so they can shut down individual farmers. You want a garden in your house. You want a chicken or a cow. Like they want to take more and more control to disempower people and make people dependent on the state. And it's like, I guess, starvation is one possible route to population reduction, as well as feeding people foods which are more and more deprived of essential nutrients. I mean, this seems part of the globalist agenda, is this population reduction. And it's shocking. As you say, it turns one's stomach when one wakes up to it. It reminds me of the quotation by Edgar Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover. He says, the individual is handicapped with coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like that, because most people kind of thought that our governments worked for us, at least to some extent.
Well,
they've lost complete control. Sorry?
It boggles the mind, Christopher, the point you just made, how people cannot see what's going on. I mean, the most blatant to me, the most blatant is that the number of people who cannot look up in the sky and see plaid markings of chemtrails and say, oh, those are jet planes. Those are passenger planes. And I'm going, wait a minute, when have you ever seen a vector? You know, the airlines, when they publish their brochures, they have these nice little maps of, look where we fly. Okay? Well, you know what? I've looked at those vectors, and I don't see any of them in a plaid pattern. And that kind of wipes out the contrail theory right there. But there it is, right in front of them. They look up at the sky. The sky is not the same color as it was when they grew up. They should know that. They're not colorblind.
Yeah.
Right? It's a pale, pale blue now. You used to be able to lie on the ground and get lost in the color of the sky.
Yeah, it's astonishing. As you say, it just shows like people are so asleep. It's like they don't have the intelligence. It's like they can't even see in the sky or question.
And the thing that scares me, this is what scares me the most, okay? Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I've been talking about this stuff for, you know, more than a decade. I've been warning about trade groups and everything else, our loss of sovereignty. I've spoken to politicians. I've been to the White House. I've gone through all kinds of machinations, you know, trying to educate people to what's going on and just basically tell them, look, you don't need me to tell you what's happening. All you need is two pairs of eyes, two eyes in your head, a halfway working brain, and the diligence to look for yourself. Because the evidence is everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, the elite have always hidden everything of value in plain sight, knowing full well that the last place we're going to look is in plain sight. You know, this is kind of the theory. I mean, look at, there was even a movie that was put out called In Plain Sight about 911.
Yeah.
You know, because all of that happened right in full view of everybody. You look at Bush's Hegelian dialectic going on right after 911. He says, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. And I went, wait a minute. I want to know who did what to whom. I'm not interested in taking sides for 5 minutes. You know, I want to know who did it. And why? And then maybe I'll think about which side I may want to espouse or no side at all. But no, he didn't give the people of America that choice. And this is how they work it. They create Hegelian dialectics. They suck people in. They rule by consensus. And of course, consensus never, ever covers the entire field of endeavor when it comes to learning anything or deciding anything. Consensus isn't the way to go. The way to go is with the facts. You know what they say, the truth will set you free, and boy, does it ever. You know, and then it says, also, beauty is truth and truth beauty, and that is all you know and all you need to know. Start there, and you're going to be led on a journey you never even thought possible. You know, you're going to go down that rabbit hole real quick, if you realize that the only thing that you've got in this life that is real is the truth. That's it.
Yeah, it's interesting how the truth doesn't change.
No, it can't. You see, truth cannot be challenged by anything.
Yeah.
And I have a famous line, I can make people mad with it, and they say, but this or but that. And I'd say, well, you know what? You can go out with your spray can and try and paint the sky another color. Call me when you're done.
Just to come back to something about chemtrails, have you by chance, did you see my video on chemtrails on Parliament Hill?
I haven't, but you know what? Because I haven't really had time the last couple of weeks, but... the bottom line is, even it's sitting right here, I can actually turn around and look at it. It's right in front of my face. I know exactly what you're talking about, so proceed.
I'm trying to say this to the people who might be listening to the show, is I recently opened up a zero-point YouTube account, and my first posted YouTube is called A Day in the Life of the Chemtrail Poisoning of the Citizens of Ottawa, Canada by a Psychopathic Elite. So what it was, I went up last September 18th on Parliament Hill because the 9/11 group was doing a 9/11 awareness event. And I was up on Parliament Hill from 10 in the morning till 6 at night, and I even conducted my radio show from there. And through the day, I was taking videos of the chemtrails being sprayed over Ottawa. And it's a very clever little video, and there are really some hidden things in it, focusing on the Peace Tower. Did you know we have a Star of David on the Peace Tower, AD? You're aware of that?
Yeah. I heard about that. I have a friend who knows about all of the... His father used to be chief security guard at the Commons, and he used to, with his father's covert approval, take people through the Parliament buildings and point out all the witchcraft symbology in the building.
Wow, very interesting.
It's all over the place.
Yeah.
Star of David's, reverse pentacles, wolf's heads, goat's heads, you name it. It is all over the Parliament buildings. And if you want to take a really good example of Masonic architecture, you look at the Manitoba legislature buildings.
Oh.
Now, my first home on this planet was right across the street from those buildings. Right across the street. And let me tell you, there's something about those buildings. I have had the same impression of them every time I've been back to my hometown, which is Winnipeg, and every time I've been around those buildings, there is an aura of unworldliness about them. They just don't, it's like the building sits, but it doesn't feel right. There's something about it that feels off. I don't know who else has picked up on that. I don't know if anyone else has.
Well,
I've always twisted my gut to have architecture like that. Yeah, it's all over the place. Peace Tower, my foot.
So listeners, please have a look at my website. So I spend the day on Parliament Hill, and including a panning up on the Peace Tower and showing the Star of David. And the Star of David on the Peace Tower actually has a central point, which is where you have the rotor that turns the hands. And in my writing, I talk about the secret of the seventh point, because the idea of the Star of David, you have six angles, six vertices, and it creates a six-sided figure in the interior. So it's associated with the number 666. But in Blavatsky's teachings, the secret of the seventh point is if you put a point in the center of the Star of David. The Theosophists, what they put in the center of the Star of David is an ankh, which is like a little cross with a head on it, kind of. And
a
that
cross
represents...
with an eye in it.
Sorry?
It's a cross with a third eye in it.
Yeah. And that's in the center. So the ankh is... So the idea is the seventh point at the center of the Star of David is the living entity. And in my video on Parliament Hill, you'll see this, and you'll see mention of it. And I swing screens around on people, and I show them the cover of Tex Mar's book called Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. So it's a very clever little video of Parliament Hill. And it's funny, at one point, Dee, they're sounding the bells on Parliament Hill. And I come in, I'm quite cheeky sometimes, I'm saying, oh, they're sounding the death knell for Ottawa citizens being sprayed with chemtrail poison. And I repeat that, and you hear
never
these
ask
bells tolling.
Bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Breathe deep, people, breathe deep. Oh, yeah, it's pretty scary.
So what brought me, you brought up chemtrails, and you were saying, like, people just have to open their eyes. How can't people see this? And you were saying about how they're not in regular flight patterns.
No.
It's so obvious once you wake up to it. But then people can't, you think, oh, they're spraying you with substances from the air. But people
think...
Oh,
they wouldn't do that, would they?
Yeah, why would they do that? They don't get it.
And they don't listen when people like Robert McNamara, who used to be the Secretary of State for the United States of America, when he said that they were not satisfied, the elite were not satisfied with population reduction methods, and they had to get serious in the future. We have to reduce population. And he said, how? By natural means, famine and disease. Now, since he said that, of course, they've developed all kinds of new ways of modifying the weather, which we know they have. I mean, come on, they've had weather technology since before the 70s. They sold Woodpecker to Russia in 1974. So you cannot tell me that, you know, here we are 40-odd years later, you're not going to tell me that these people have not advanced their technology in the last 40 years. You're not going to tell me that with a straight face, surely. You know, so we've got a situation where there is so much being manipulated in this country and in this world. I mean, we can't even speak about Canada per se as a unique situation, because it isn't. These things that we're talking about here are going on everywhere in the world. I mean, everywhere, every country is going through its own kind of death throes here as the elite work to remove all our sovereignty. Once they remove all our sovereignty, which they've been talking about since the Protocols of Zion and beyond, at that point in time, all they need is the platform for a world governance system, and they already have it. It's called the UN.
Yeah, it seems... Sometimes it strikes me how, oh, they've already attained it, really. Like, they own our government.
This is how they work. Mm-hmm. Okay, they set it up to their own satisfaction and then announce it.
Yeah.
You know, and basically they present us with a fait accompli. That's what they've always done. It's like Harper goes out and signs these agreements, presents them to us as a fait accompli, never mentions the fact that every time he signs one of these international agreements, a piece of our country gets more controlled by foreign interests.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
And now people are finally, and I mean, I've been screaming about it for at least 10 years.
Well,
since before 9/11, I was saying, it's the trade agreement, stupid. This is where they get you.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody thought I was crazy. And they'd say, oh, you're just being silly. There's nothing wrong with free trade. Well, there would be nothing wrong with free and open trade on a handshake where everybody's intentions are for the benefit of the people and the benefit of everybody involved. That's a good contract, wouldn't you say, where everybody is happy? Well, they're not worried about whether we're happy or not. They're worried about controls. So now we have the Prime Minister in May intending to sign off on the CETA agreement, the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement with the European Union, which, as we all know, is basically a dying horse. It's fallen apart at the seams, and people are really, really intensely infuriated at their loss of sovereignty over in the EU. And their grouping together of all these nations has not solved their economic woes. In fact, it's made it worse. So now you've got Spain complaining. You've got Greece falling apart. You've got Italy falling apart. And ain't it funny the Vatican Bank isn't bailing Italy? Not giving them a penny. Son of a gun, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
The richest
charity of
the
Catholic Church.
Yeah, and what about charity begins at home?
Yeah.
What about that? You know, I mean, everything of the church is anti-Christian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything, is, and by saying anti-Christian, I don't mean you call yourself a Christian. That's what anti-Christian means, that you're somebody's against how you practice your religion. No, I'm talking about anti the things that Christ taught.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
Which, as you well know, because you've researched and researched your little face off for many, many years, you know as well as I do, the principles espoused by Christ were also espoused by just about every religion on the planet.
Whether except Talmudic Judaism.
Well, yeah, but the Talmud, that's another story. But even the Talmud has, you know, this is the interesting thing to me, that even the Talmud, which is all about laws, has as its chief law none other than the Golden Rule.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it says in the Talmud, it says, do not unto thy brother that which you would not wish your brother to do unto you. In fact, this is the only law, and all else is but commentary. So what does that do?
Well,
what it does is it provides the Golden Rule, or the law of karma, to read it another way. You put it out, you get it back. That's sowing and reaping in the Christian parlance.
Yeah.
Okay? But what you've got is that here we are as human beings, and we're supposed to do stuff, make decisions, find out what the results were, repeat the good ones, and eschew the bad ones. That's what we're supposed to do. Okay? And then the Ten Commandments then become a guidebook to living according to that law. So that, to me, always made perfect sense. Now, I'm not a seminarian. I'm not a Christian scholar or religious scholar by any means. But when I see something that makes logical sense, right, it's going to snap to in my brain, and that's what I saw. What I saw was that we are supposed to be here doing no harm to anyone, including ourselves, no harm to anything. This is the native way. This is why the indigenous populations all over the globe were successful. They were successful societies. And the reason they were successful had nothing to do with money. It had to do with honor.
Mm-hmm.
It had to do with honoring the earth, honoring the people on the earth, honoring their responsible as conservators of what they use. And they never, ever moved on and left the place worse than they found it. Never. Now, on the other hand, we foul our nest with impunity.
As you say, it's amazing. Like, the Christian churches are totally anti-Christian in terms of none of the Christian churches have done anything to oppose these horrible wars, all based on lies, all based on lies and public deceptions, and the churches do nothing. I mean, how are Christians standing up for their brothers? Like, we haven't stood up. We've just mass murdered 2 million Muslim people, kind of, you know? And the Christians, you have this horrible, stupid Christian Zionist agenda in the States, and my goodness, it's like the Christian movement's been hijacked, and you know, you have the Catholic Church with incredible wealth that they've stolen from people around the world.
And on top of that, they got a Muslim with a wonky birth certificate as their president, for God's sake, and they're sitting there going, duh. Like, holy crap.
Yeah. Oh. It's like,
Where did your minds go?
Yeah, it's like everybody's been so deceived. It's so incredible the extent of the public deception that's been able to be perpetrated. It's astonishing.
And it seems to me that they would rather just allow it and ignore it and turn a blind eye to it than get caught for their own stupidity.
was pretty overwhelming. I mean, so many people have become part of the system, but they're compartmentalized and don't grasp the larger whole.
Yeah, well, they sure don't. And in the meantime, this is, and I was about to say this earlier and got sidetracked. I don't even remember how, but, you know, my neighbors next door to me just had a baby a few days ago, just brought their new baby home. This is their second new baby in as many years. And, you know, I'm looking at this lovely, and they are, they're a lovely young couple. They have beautiful children. And under ordinary circumstances, I would say this is a family that's going to succeed. They're going to have a good life. Their children are going to grow up well, right? But I look around and I go, wait a minute. Their father's a financial planner. Okay, well, look around at the banking situation and tell me, how long is his job safe? The wife can't work because she's got two babies at home. Okay, so where is their income going to come from to feed these children? And it even says in the Bible, in Revelation, it says, woe to them who give suck. And what that means is woe to those who have infants so young that they're still breastfeeding. Woe to those, because they will be responsible for these little lives as all this breaks loose, and it is starting. So, you know, to my mind, is it sounds horrible even to my own ears, but I tell people, why would you have children and knowing full well that this world, worse than it is, a total verifiable police state is what you're giving to your children for a future. Why would you want to do that?
Well, for multiple reasons, people would. But yes, I mean, I understand that sentiment.
You know what I mean?
I mean, it also raises, like, the call for us all to kind of stand up for our children. And
well,
it reminds me of the native intention of preserving the earth for seven generations, and
it's
for the little ones, and it's for our children and grandchildren that we need to be waking up and somehow.
Well, you know what? That's the same line I heard when I was a flower child. Same line I heard, and all those hippies became yuppies, and then they went on and they created even more of the mess that they espoused to hate back in the 60s and 70s. They espoused that they hated the materialism and the power structures and the bankers and the laws and all these repressive things they said they hated. Now they have become. And this is what's really terrifying to me, is that the world seems that overwhelming that even our best laid principles get taken over because it's too much of a fight. Well, at this point in time, laziness is not your friend.
No, it certainly isn't. We need to all become much more active in every way we can, informing people and trying to do things publicly. It's interesting, Dee, you say a couple things that you begin to see it falling apart. Let's try to talk about that a little bit, and also any things we see, signs of hope. I don't know, for instance, were you aware? I think it was one state, maybe Tennessee, this month passed in the state legislature a motion to in opposition to the sustainability program.
Yeah, well, you know what? Toronto asked for an exemption from ICLEI, which is the Sustainable Cities Plan of the UN.
Oh, did they?
They are, well, not from ICLEI itself, but actually from CETA. They wanted to be exempted from CETA.
Wow.
So this is, now, bear in mind, this is years after the inception of this trade agreement, like the start of their negotiations on CETA. It's been a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly when it started because they started behind our back, of course, just like everything else. But now, even though CETA right from the get-go was going to affect municipal purchasing practices, they were going to have to stop buying local, which we all know is what stimulates an economy. is mm-hmm. to stimulate it from within. And we all know that. We're not stupid. You know, we know that when you help your neighbor can then turn around and help you. We know this. We're human mm-hmm. beings. We're used to working with each other. We kind of do that all the time, you know. And these idiots come along and say, oh, no, we can do it better, and you can sell your water utility to this French company, and it'll all be fine. And we're going, no, it's not fine. Well, here's the thing. Blew me away that Toronto actually asked for an exemption. Of course, they're not going to get it. They're not going to get any kind of
who
exemption.
Who do they ask?
Harper.
Sorry?
They asked Harperius. The Emperor Harperius.
Emperor Harper.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Emperor Harperius has been requested. Now, that's, you know, going to cause him nothing more than a good belly laugh.
But this is good. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's terribly scary when you actually start looking at the layers of controls that have been put in place. There
yeah.
are so many layers of controls and so many things. Like, you know, I'm looking at certain groups trying to take certain actions to secure certain freedoms, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For example, up until, maybe 6 or 8 months ago, not even, maybe less than that, I was in support of an action by one group in Canada to get an injunction against Health Canada because under the Constitution and under the British North America Act, they absolutely have no mandate to regulate anything.
Huh.
Now, that's all true. They don't have a mandate to regulate anything. It's never been put down in law. In fact, the law states that health is totally the purview of the provinces. As it is in the states have sovereignty over health care. Well, you can see what's happening with U.S. health care.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Obama's got his hands on it,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can see what's going on with Canadian health care because Health Canada, read Canadian government, whoever happens to be sitting at the helm, okay, basically the bureaucrats call them temps anyway. They're temporary, we're permanent. That's their idea. So they basically are doing exactly the same thing. They're taking over health care in a venue, meaning the federal venue, that they have no right to take over. Well, how are they doing this? How are they getting away with this? It's really simple. If you look at CETA, if you look at the trade agreements, what you'll find is all of those roads lead to CODEX, the international standards for food safety. They call it food safety. Really what it is a plan to minimize the nutritional content and the ability to access nutritional essential nutrients and supplements. They're trying to starve us of nutrients.
Yeah.
And they're restricting things that are not drugs. They're foods. They're restricting these things, but the minute you make a claim that they can actually fix something, all of a sudden it's called a drug. So they've got all this stuff going on. And here are these people thinking they can get an injunction against Health Canada because this isn't right, this isn't legal. Well, you know what? They're right. It isn't right, and it isn't legal. However, what is legal is the fact that the very laws they're relying on to resolve this issue, namely our Constitution and the British North America Act, in the first place, the British North America Act, anybody who researches it finds out, it died with Queen Victoria. We've been living under a fraud all these years, for more than a century, 111 years. We've been living under a fraud that we actually have a BNA Act. But they removed the succession clause in the British North America Act.
Wow, I'm not familiar with all this and what
well,
the
see, when the law was written, when it was signed in 1867,
mm-hmm.
forming Canada as a dominion,
mm-hmm.
okay, it had a succession clause in it, meaning that this act was binding on Queen Victoria, her heirs, successors, and assigns. Okay, now, mm-hmm. before she died in the 1890s, they removed that succession clause so that when she died, there was no one on whom this act would apply, not the new king, nobody. Okay, so the act just went poof, as if it never existed. Now, nobody was told that. We acted accordingly ever since then. But as we know, the elite hegemony over the world did not start in the last century.
No.
You know, it's been going on for a long time. So then there's the second aspect. So you got no British North America Act to protect and defend your injunction. Now, the second thing is, question, is our Constitution domestic law or international law? Answer, it's domestic. It was made in Canada for Canadians, was it not? Okay? That means it's a domestic law. Well, guess what? Foreign agreements supersede domestic law, including constitutions.
Yeah.
And so when you hear world rulers like David Cameron, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, okay, when you hear that man saying that human rights are getting in the way of protecting Britons from terrorism, what does that mean? Okay, then you have our Justice Minister, Rob Nicholson, thank God no relation, saying to me and to many others in an email, it's written down, your rights, and this is a direct quote from our Justice Minister, your rights are subject to interpretation. And I'm going, not by you, pal, unless you've just appointed yourself head of the Supreme Court, you don't have any right to interpret squat. So don't be interpreting all over my butt, because you're going to get it right back in your nose. He doesn't have the right. But what does have the right, and this is why he's correct, the son of a gun.
It's international law.
It's international law. So our Constitution is trumped, and it's been trumped, and the United States Constitution is trumped, too. And that's why Bush called it nothing but a, quote, goddamn piece of paper.
Exactly.
End quote. That's why he said it, because he knew. They all knew. And they've known for a century what was going on, because they started making these agreements in the after the World Wars.
Conspiring after the World
Wars. Oh, but there's no conspiracies. Yeah. Hell no, they're all theoretical, right? And I'm going, well, not if you read history.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been one of the most shocking things to me, was to see how all our leaders, like Harper and Trudeau and other Chrétien, all our government officials have been attendees of the Bilderbergs and the Council on Foreign Relations. And these are all secret societies. That's what Canadians don't get. Canadians think, the Canadians think that the government actually serves the citizenry. And they haven't. The government has been hijacked by these people who their allegiances are to these secret societies and this globalist agenda. And it reminds me of one case that came up in Canada where there was an Indian community in northern Ontario which was demanding that they stop chemtrail spraying them because the people were suffering so many sicknesses. And they took it all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada to get it stopped. And at the Supreme Court of Canada, the final verdict was that it wasn't being done by Canadians, and so it was beyond their jurisdiction.
Canadian airspace we've got no jurisdiction over our own airspace. Well, no, we don't. Thank you very much, Harperius.
It's not just Harper. It's been generations of our leaders who have gotten us into this situation of surrendering our sovereignty and self-determination over to these international bodies. And it's been done all by stealth.
Yep.
While denying it.
Well, actually, you know what? I have to kind of disagree with you, because it's really not by stealth. It's just basically, I mean, they do everything pretty much out in the open. So a lot of it is not by stealth. Some of it gets tied up in knots behind closed doors in orders from council and executive orders. But really, the worst of it goes on right in front of our faces. And they know we're not watching. They know we're all busy with our own lives. They know we're all struggling. And if you're struggling to put food on the table, have you got time to watch C-SPAN?
No.
Have you really? Because I don't.
No, they know there are very few of us who really grasp it, and most people can't, and they're struggling just with all the problems in their own lives.
This is it. So, you know, it's like, oh, let's have another baby. They're oblivious to what's going on around us.
And it's tragic.
Or let's plan on owning a house. And I'm going, are you nuts? On your deed, it says you're a tenant. Why would you want to buy anything? They're going to take it anyway because UN Agenda 21 says that private property ownership is not good for collective sustainability.
Yeah, that's one of the major objectives, it seems, of the sustainability movement, is that they're seizing people's lands and properties using different kinds of regulations for endangered species, or they're restricting people's use of their own land more and more. They can't grow like so close to any moving water. All kinds of restrictions on people's use of their own land.
And then there was this lovely little executive order that Obama signed just over a week or so ago. And that executive order that he signed essentially takes all control of emergency management and puts it in his hands. And he essentially, he can through that, take your land, your property, even your physical self. If you happen to have a skill they want, they're going to recruit you. They'll pay you or not at their own bidding. They'll take your everything you own. They'll move you. They'll take your land. They'll take your food. They'll take your car. They can take anything under this act.
Your children.
Yeah, well, they're planning on that, too. Eventually, they want to have a state-run schools like in Russia, where children were taken from their parents at the age of 3.
Yeah.
And their idea behind that was, we can identify their talents and develop them. And, of course, where did they develop them? Figure skaters, ballet dancers, and hockey players. That's where they made everything such a happy event, was figure skaters, hockey players, ballet dancers. So, you know, this was the example of how state-run schools could produce excellence. Well, you know what? If you mind control and completely control a child from the age of next to nothing, you're going to get a superior performance, but you're not going to get a superior human being.
Yeah, you're certainly not. It's also shocking to wake up and realize that these people have been socially engineering us through our whole lifetimes. And one, it's like a fish in water. When you've grown up with it, you haven't seen it, but you've
That's
been influenced.
Right.
Like,
That's
these
right.
people wanted to bring about the breakdown of family structures.
Yeah. Well,
and break down small communities, like local communities.
Exactly. And on that note, okay, people do not understand, you know, and they never did, really. This is not something that the elite created, but they did take advantage of, because that's what they do with things they don't create, is take advantage. But I know so many people, as a counselor, and I am a certified counselor, I've talked to many people who were raised in dysfunctional households with certain measures of abuse going on. And one of the things that I tell all these people is, look, kids don't come with a set of instructions, and parents come with the garbage bag full of their own issues and traumas and angst and anxieties from their life. That's what they come into your life with as a child, but they don't have a manual, and they're going to give you only what they have in your fridge. And if all they have in their fridge is sour milk to give you, you have two choices. Okay? One of them is to strive in your life never to drink sour milk again. And the other is to develop a taste for the stuff. And unfortunately, because most people are subjected to a level of societal disdain, and I would use that word very advisedly, society looks down on the lesser of us as a general characteristic, which kind of sucks. But the thing is that you either accept the sour milk in your life or you strive to beat it. And it used to be that people would generally strive to beat it. Now they just accept it. And now, because of that attitude,
mm-hmm.
that we are given this life to live and we're just going to live it, because, hey, resistance is futile. You'd think you were watching an episode of Star Trek with the Borg attacking. resistance is futile, right?
Yeah.
Because they all fall into this paradigm. And once they fall into this paradigm, try breaking them out of it. It's really hard. And the interesting thing that I found is that the thing that cracks a paradigm is a question that won't go away. Because when people's brains are presented with something that they know has a problem attached to it,
mm-hmm.
their mind is automatically going to ferret that thing out like a dog will chase around a yard knowing he's put a bone there but he can't remember where.
Well, I mean, not many people seem to ferret out 9/11. Like, you know, there was something that broke shattered my paradigm, waking up to that.
You know what? You know what I said on 9/11?
Mm-hmm.
I said, here we go. This is what I've been predicting.
Oh, yeah.
I said, here we go. I'd been saying it for a couple of years already. This is how they bring America down. It's
yeah,
a superpower.
Yeah.
You cannot wipe it out financially. It will bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
You can't wipe it out militarily. It'll kill you.
Yeah.
Okay? So the
it was an obstacle to global government, like
of
the strength
it was.
And vitality.
So they can't have a global government with a superpower on the table, can they?
Yeah. No.
Okay? I mean, who in their right mind is going to set up an organization and have somebody more powerful than the administration sitting in the audience? Not going to work. Never would work. Never would be part of a plan. So the United States had to be brought down.
Yeah.
And it isn't down yet.
No. No, in fact, there's growing resistance, like people are beginning to realize the seriousness of it.
No, but actually, you see, here's the thing, Christopher, before you go mm-hmm. too far into that little mind bender, here's the thing. Resistance is part of the crack-up that they want. This is what
yes.
they want. They want things to crack up. They want Americans to turn around and revolt. They want that because it gives them the opportunity as the UN to say, I'll save you. I'll give you an alternative government. I'll give you an opportunity, right?
Well, I mean,
so
I don't think people are waking up to the corruption of the UN what's
being
done.
Oh, no, they aren't. I mean, and they don't even realize it's not the UN that's running things.
No.
That's just the arm of the elite.
Exactly.
Just an arm of the elite. It's one of the arms.
Like the IMF and the other organizations.
Come on. IMF, it sounds like it's some kind of body put together to protect and govern things, you know, so that everybody acts properly. Come to find out, if you research the International Monetary Fund, you find it's a private company owned by N.M. Rothschild & Sons.
Yeah, and that they've participated in helping to stage revolutions and assassinations and terrorism around the world so as to take control of third world countries and steal their resources impoverish them.
Oh, yeah, and it's always problem, reaction, solution. It's always.
Yeah.
You know, thank you, David Icke, for exposing that so admirably. But, you know, when you really think about it, they create a problem. And then they wait for the reaction of the people who are suffering with the problem. And then mm-hmm. they come in wearing their superhero cape and say, we'll fix the problem.
Yeah.
And, of course, we all bow down to them and say, thank you, Superman. Here's all our money. Here's all our souls. You know, you own us now.
Well, there's a growing number of us that are seeing it. And I mean, it's making it harder for them to do these things because so many people are aware of the false flag terrorism now. It doesn't fly as easily, and realizing the corruption of the corporate media.
I really think that the underwear bomber had a lot to do with people's skepticism about this terrorism business in the first place, because that was such a ludicrous incident. I mean, here's mm-hmm. a guy puts explosive in his tidy whities. Then sits on them. Now, how many war movies have any of us seen where a guy saves his platoon by falling on a bomb? Okay? Happens all the time. You see guys in war movies, they fall on grenades that are about to blow so that nobody else gets hit. Why? Because you can smother an explosion. Okay? Well, this idiot, after supposedly going through all kinds of machinations to be on the flight in the first place. He shouldn't have been on.
No, he was waved through by these criminal elements by customs.
He was waved through by airport security. Waved through. Didn't even have a passport, from what I hear.
Yeah.
But at any rate, this guy gets on the plane and literally smothers the bomb with his own butt. Now, whatever was in that bomb wasn't enough even to shred the tighty-whities. It singed them a little bit. We've all seen pictures of him. And it singed the tighty-whities. But it did not even singe them badly enough that they came apart. They were in one piece.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, in the first place, who would think that a bomb that size was ever going to do any damage to a plane anyway? And
I mean, the whole thing was so phony, but I mean, it's like they can get away with anything because Chertoff wanted to sell some of his machines, so they staged this. But I mean, it's farcical. I mean, it was farcical like the shoe bomber.
That's what I mean.
People
looked at it and they went, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. Who in their right mind would ever do this? And a lot of people got snapped, too, by that one incident. So it was a watershed moment, I thought, you know, in terms of people's consciousness. But again, these things fade from view.
Yeah.
They fade from view. More stuff comes out, you know. Madonna divorces Guy Ritchie, and all of a sudden everybody's watching somewhere else. Or, gee, it's a new season of American Idol. Or, holy smokes, have you seen The Voice?
Yeah.
Or what?
Yeah, always
the NBA
different
game this
distractions.
Weekend?
Yeah.
Bread and circuses. Bread and circuses.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Roman days. This is what they use to distract people's attention from the collapse of their own empire.
Yeah. What I call it is men playing games with balls. Like so many men today, that's all they're concerned with is like the hockey and the football and the basketball and the baseball,
like men playing
games with balls.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
they're being
out.
Poisoned from the sky.
Yeah, well,
they're...
check this out. You know what's really funny? What's really funny is down in the hood, kids play with basketballs, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Up in the elite societies, you know, like the higher up in society you get, well, first you play tennis. Right. And the guys who are the elite, the only sport they play is golf. So it seems that the higher up on the scale, the smaller the balls.
Okay. Yeah, very good. but it's this distraction with all this kind of titillation. It seems the media is like people just have to break away from their TV sets. I haven't watched TV. I mean, I've never really watched it through my life. Other than I used to watch the news, and now I don't even bother with that because I'm on
the
internet.
For me, Christopher, I'm one, if you can call it lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I come out of advertising, and you know the thing that made me quit advertising was the fact that I knew in order to make a living, I was lying to people. Right, that's how I made my living, was lying to them and trying to make them think that unless they bought what I was selling, they weren't going to be good enough human beings to draw breath.
Yeah.
And that's what I was doing. So I said, wait a minute, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want someone doing this to me, even though they do it every day. But because I was writing the spin, I could see through the spin.
Yeah.
Right? So I deliberately watched a lot of TV,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of a lot of stuff that I was watching. I would look at it and say, what are they teaching here? What are they trying to teach? Where's the spin?
Yeah.
And I would identify things and unspin them.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there is a use. If you know what you're doing, there's a use for watching TV. Because literally you can predict by watching the media, and this is, again, where they own the media. Six pairs of hands control Canadian media.
Mm-hmm.
Six pairs of hands.
Yeah.
Okay? So consequently, what you're dealing with is standard protocols that they use across the board. Well, what are these protocols? What are these protocols? What exactly are they feeding people? What is their propaganda, and how are they using it?
Yeah,
unless you know that, you can't fight it.
Yeah, and I can see then, as you say, the usefulness of watching the TV and watching what they're presenting. I mean, you can see now how they're trying to pimp this war with Iran, how we have to save civilization because Iran might get a nuclear bomb. Well,
yeah,
no mention
century.
Of the fact of Israel having hundreds of them, never abiding by any international regulatory agency, and
okay,
Israel
well,
threatening to use them.
Yeah, okay, now you've done it, okay, because I got to bring this up. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's already 5 o'clock, and I'm afraid if I don't bring this up right now, we won't talk about it. Okay, here's the thing. What do you think of the new NDP leader replacing Jack Layton, who has quoted it, has been quoted as saying, I will support Israel in all ways, in all situations?
I hadn't followed that closely, but when I saw his name and I looked into him, I thought, oh, no, they've taken over the NDP completely.
But I thought the
NDP had already been taken over.
They were. And let me,
yeah.
You know, as a metaphysician, okay, I make the body-mind connection in my private work, in you know, another hat that I wear, but not publicly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you learn when you are a metaphysician is the fact proved by NASA that thought energy actually crosses space and time and distance and actually has an effect on things. Okay, now they proved this with a particle accelerator. They had five or six different people, just ordinary people off the street, and they had isolated a quark in this particle accelerator, which is the smallest particle that they'd been able to isolate prior to this. They had this particle inside the particle accelerator, which is nothing but a great big microwave to make it wiggle and jiggle and do stuff. And they said to people, they gave each of them a piece of paper and a pencil, and they said, okay, write down what you think this particle is going to be doing when you view it through the scope. And they were all given an individual view. It's like, you know, like a microscope. You put your eye to it. So they don't have six places for six people to watch. It's one at a time. So one at a time, these people go to the particle accelerator, and they look through the viewfinder, and they see this particle. And do you know who was disappointed? Nobody. The particle performed exactly to what each person had written down in advance. Okay? Now, one person would say it was bouncing off walls. Another one would say it would be orbiting. Another one said it would be sitting there vibrating. Okay? Nobody was disappointed. The quark did exactly what they thought. Now, I saw this on TV on Arts and Entertainment. It was run on a show called Phenomenon, the Last Lost Archives, and it was repeated over the summer a few years ago 8 or 9 times, which is what a lot of the channels do to avoid fees these days. They repeat and rerun until you're blue in the face.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. You guys have just proven that thought energy manipulates matter, okay, and forget to mention that our bodies are matter and that our thoughts influence them. Okay, so now let's go back to Jack Layton. Jack Layton, who was my counselor, my MP, okay, and who I had known all the way from working on city committees with him way back in the 80s, okay, I've known Jack a long, long time. And he was always, you know, a little bit of a pompous guy, a little bit arrogant. He was what we refer to as the cock on the dunghill type. He'd be crowing on the top of a shit heap. You know, that would be Jack Layton.
Okay?
And he was cute and he was funny and he made friends with people and he always wore suspenders. And I told him just a year before he died, I said, Jack, your suspenders used to mark you as a man of the people and now they just hold up your pants. Now, why did I say that? Well, because when Jack went to Parliament, when he first went to Parliament, and he went as my MP, and when he first went to Parliament, I thought, well, now this ought to be interesting, because Jack is going to come nose to nose with all those things he professes to hate. So we had an Environment Day thing in Toronto, and there's a local park here at Logan and Danforth in the East End, and it's sort of like a little street corner park, concrete. There's no grass, but there's a little fountain. It's a little gathering place, cute little place. Anyways, the politicians were in there cleaning up garbage, you know, nail on the end of a stick, poke the garbage, stuck in the bag. The mayor was there. David Miller was there. Jack Layton was there. A lot of NDP people were there. School trustees, city councilors, the whole nine. They were all poking garbage and sticking it in plastic bags. So I walk up to Jack and I say, Jack, what about this sovereignty deal? I said, somebody's got to do something about it with the trade groups and how we lose our sovereignty. He says, I know. He said, I'm very, very concerned about that. He says, people don't realize how much control of their country is going out the back door. I said, no, it isn't. It isn't known. People just don't, they're not aware.
No.
And I said, what is the NDP planning to do about that? And he says, well, you need to talk to Peter Julian. Julian, who's an MP from BC.
Yeah.
Okay. He says he's our point man on the issue.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I decided before I talked to Peter Julian, I was going to do a little nosing around and see exactly what the man was about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see anything of any substance coming out of Peter Julian, nor in fact anybody in the NDP, for a long, long time after that. Now, in the meantime, unbeknownst to the rest of us, Jack's getting sick.
Yeah.
What's he getting sick with? Prostate cancer. Well, metaphysically, prostate cancer is hooked up with the concept, and it usually hits men in their middle age when they start to feel doubtful about, you know, I haven't, you know, achieved my bucket list. I have not achieved the goals that I set for myself. When you feel like your manhood is waning, but you have stuff to do and now you can't do it because you're no longer as manly as you were when you were 25. That's the kind of mentality that is required for prostate cancer.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, yeah, I've never heard that. That's interesting.
So who gets prostate cancer?
Yeah.
Jack Layton, within a short period of being a member of Parliament and finding out that when you go to Parliament, you don't have any power. You don't have the ability to speak for your people. All you have the ability to do is translate talking points. That's it.
Yeah.
You have no power at all. You don't represent squat. You're being given orders from on top. And, you know, the NDP never did a damn thing on the sovereignty issue. And when Bill C-36 passed, the Food Safety Act, Consumer Product Safety Act, when it passed, and it gave an order to the health minister saying that it will take direction from foreign entities.
Yeah.
What was Jack's talking point? And I quote, well, we're happy to be on a level playing field with our trading partners. And I went, what?
Yeah. I mean, they have such euphemisms for everything they do. That's why all their bills, like, they have a bill concerning consumer safety. But then you go into it and you realize that's not what it is at all.
And then I get sent an email this morning, okay, actually last night, from a friend, again in BC, who points out, and from an article in the Globe and Mail, that the Canada Food Inspection Agency's budget has been cut in the new Flaherty budget.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay. It's been cut by all these millions of dollars, and that means that consumers, get this, consumers are going to have to be responsible for reading the labels and determining for themselves whether the food in the can is the same as what it says on the label.
Yeah.
Okay, now, I read that, coming from Health Freedom, I read that, I start to just choke with laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because at the same time as they're saying, oh, the consumer is perfectly capable of doing this, when in fact, that they aren't capable of doing, okay, this comes under good manufacturing practices, okay, they're not capable of determining, how can they do the lab testing to determine whether the food content on the label is in fact what's in the can? They can't.
Yeah.
So, at the same time as our famous nanny state throws us under the bus on that score, what are they doing with the Natural Health Protection Branch? Ha, ha, ha. These same nutrients that come from the same food, okay, the beta-carotene from the carrots and, you know, the resveratrol from the grapes and the vitamin C from the oranges and other citrus and the vitamins and minerals from the green leafy stuff and the antioxidants and the yada yada. It all comes from food. So why on earth would they say, oh, people can read labels and that's okay on their food, when the food supplements, which are nothing more than extracts of that same food, people are not allowed to buy on their own? So now they're starting to look ridiculous even under the... You don't need a magnifying glass to see how ridiculous their rules are. It's right out in your face.
Yeah.
If you get your medicine from your food and all natural health products are concentrated elements from those foods, then how can they deregulate one and over-regulate the other? Aren't they the same thing?
Yeah, well, and we see the whole criminal pattern. We see in the government's not concerned with our welfare. I mean,
well, no,
you see there's a hidden agenda in all of it.
And here's the interesting thing. If they over-regulate natural health products, who do they benefit? Pharma.
Mm-hmm.
Pharmaceutical industry, the chemical industry, the same oil and gas and petrochemical and chemical industry that was founded by John Rockefeller at the turn of the last century. And once he had a cartel on oil and gas, he just thought it'd be perfectly wonderful to have one in medicine, too, since they use so many of their chemical products.
Yeah, new forms of snake oil.
Yeah.
The new snake oil of the 21st century and all these pharmaceutical poisons.
Exactly.
And they're trying to prevent all natural foods and supplements. It's terrible.
So there you have a bandwagon being created, and then he puts out the brass bands to promote it. And bingo-bango, you have governments that kiss butt to pharma while squelching people who sell healthy food like raw milk.
Yeah.
Okay?
I mean, we see the most disgusting things, like Harper spending $300 million to give young girls in Eastern Canada the... vaccination, Gardasil vaccination, $300 million. And you see these guys jump from his inner cabinet, and you see them jump over to the pharmaceutical companies with huge...
Of course they do.
It's terrible.
You'll find the pharma companies are full of former Health Canada employees, too.
Yeah.
Pharma finds it beneficial to hire Health Canada because, essentially... They're now Siamese twins. They're genetically fused.
Yeah.
You know, with pharma's workers coming to Health Canada and Health Canada's workers going to pharma, they are genetically fused between the two. They're now Siamese twins.
Yeah.
And neither one can exist without the other.
Yeah.
Okay, pharma benefits Health Canada because Health Canada completely operates illegally. But you see, pretty soon, this is what people don't recognize. Pretty soon, they're not going to need Health Canada. They're not going to need to worry about what Health Canada thinks.
We'll be subsumed under international law.
Exactly.
Exactly. Well, I mean, even Health Canada, if we're subsumed under international law, then that can give power to Health Canada to usurp that of the provinces, can't it?
Well, here's the thing. Once international law supersedes all domestic law, including our Constitution. Well, it's our Constitution that gives the provinces those powers, so guess what?
Well, it usurps our Constitution.
Completely usurps the Constitution, and that means that it also, at the same time, usurps the state sovereignty of the provinces in health care and education. It usurps all of that, takes it all over, just because an international agreement and a group behind it. See, they can come in with an agreement that halfway looks good. Then they can have a meeting and make it look all bad.
Yeah.
That's all they need to do. Because if you read the information, excuse me, on the World Trade Organization website, under sovereignty, just go on WTO.org and look up sovereignty. And it says right in there, and this is the mother of all trade groups, is the World Trade Organization. And, of course, we know we're members, aren't we? Okay, well, here's the thing. You go on that website under sovereignty, and what does it say? It says that an international trade agreement is an enforceable international contract. And it says that in order to gain the benefits of belonging to the group, member nations surrender their sovereignty to the wishes of the group.
Yeah.
Okay? That's what it says on the World Trade Organization website, and it is sat there in plain sight for years and years and years. And how many people believed me 10 years ago when I said, look what that does? Did anybody ever look and say, what's the aftermath of that loss of sovereignty?
Yeah.
What does that control?
Yeah.
And when you realize, my God, it controls everything, you realize Parliament is now irrelevant. We're complaining, as Canadians, millions of us. It's not just the people listening to this radio program or any other alternative radio program or TV program or anything else. It's millions of ordinary Canadians are complaining about one thing, and that is our government does not listen to us. Our government does not do what we want. Our government does what it wants.
Yeah.
Well, this has been particularly evident under Harperius.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got a situation where people are very aware, but they don't know why the government doesn't listen. Why their MP, who seems like such a nice guy or such a nice woman, can't listen.
Because they don't grasp the underlying structure of what's in terms of the elites and so on.
And you know what? This is why. Now, I am speculating here, but I think this is good speculation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just coming up with it, so you're the first to hear it.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when I saw Obama and Harper get elected, both of them just like, boom, there they are. And they're in there, and Harper's got this majority. I'm going, huh? How the hell did that happen? People hated him. How the hell did he get a majority?
Yeah, it was shocking.
Okay, so now we find out there were schniggity crooks being played behind the scenes, and now it's looking a little more obvious. Okay, but here's the thing. Because we have a majority government that is so earplugged and blindfolded and even nose-plugged against the wishes of the Canadian population, which keeps pleading with it to do this or that, okay, they are like a cover for the fact. Harper is being blamed for what's being done internationally. Obama is being blamed for what's being done internationally. Now, I've told you this before. When I watched the inauguration of Barack Obama, and you've studied the symbols, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. They cut him off at the knees by ritual when they inaugurated him. His inauguration was past the noon apex of the sun's climb during the sky. Okay? They did have the Washington needle, the obelisk, which is the phallic symbol, the symbol to Ra, the sun god. They did have that reflected in the pool, but they weren't there at noon. They were 20 minutes late.
Oh, I didn't know that was... Yeah.
Oh, now, wait.
But why did he have to repeat it? He had to repeat it.
Okay, I'm getting to that. Let's go through the process. Now, first of all, every president since Washington has been inaugurated using the same Bible.
Oh.
It's an inaugural Bible, and it is a Masonic Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Supplied by Masons. Of course, all the founding fathers were Masons on both sides of the argument, so that was kind of interesting, too. That's another thing. But at any rate, it's a Masonic ceremony. They missed the time. It's supposed to happen on the stroke of noon, which is the peak of the sun's power during the day. This is what they're doing, is they're conferring the sun's power through the obelisk, through the reflecting pool, to the newly crowned president standing on the steps of the Capitol building at that time of year, every time, every single time. There was no Masonic Bible. In fact, they had to go running to go grab a Bible.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now I'm going, oh, that's a problem. Then the head of the Supreme Court, what's his name, John Reed, was it?
I'm not sure.
John, I can't remember what his name was. It's not relevant. But at any rate, this guy who is administering the oath to Obama. Now, we all know Obama has a problem with speaking without a teleprompter. He's better now, but when he was first the president, he couldn't speak terribly well unless he had a teleprompter.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is when he was first inaugurated, so he was, in speaking terms, he was at his worst. Okay, so here he is. There's no teleprompter. He's being administered an oath, and the guy administering the oath screws it up.
Oh.
Okay, he said the wrong words and then had to correct himself. By then, because the speaker was supposed to, he basically was taking the place of the teleprompter because Obama was repeating after him. Obama screwed up the oath.
Oh.
Well, they finally got it all out. But then after that, they said, wait a minute. And this was the excuse they gave. They said that some people would say that the oath wasn't properly administered and therefore the inauguration was not official. So what they did was the following day, and bear in mind this is a sun ceremony, they go into a bunker, and this is at night when there's no sun in the sky, in a bunker where there's no daylight whatsoever, okay, and with no Bible whatsoever, they administered the oath yet again. And that was the second inauguration. And I'm going, they did not confer upon him the power of the sun. And because they didn't confer upon him the power of the sun, that means this poor bastard is a Judas goat. Now I'm looking at the two of them, and aren't
a Judas goat meaning someone that they're planning on
sacrificing. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what are they doing? Well, they got people real mad at Obama right now. And they got people real mad at Harper right now. And in the meantime, the guys who really are pulling the strings, they're not being watched.
Yeah, I mean, they like to keep their names out of the news.
Well, I mean,
they like their puppets, but
you see, what we're not noticing is we're not noticing that at the same time as our economies are crashing, what we signed to international banking rules, we can't rule our own economies.
Yeah.
Okay?
This is
the joke about, you know, the Canadian Action Party. You know, love those guys. They're all about freedom and sovereignty, but I hate to tell them, the Bank of Canada is now signed to Basel 3.2.
Is now what?
Signed to Basel 3 as well as everybody else. At the end of the G20, there was a press conference held, and in that press conference, Stephen Harper was asked, you know, like, why did you sign to these new banking regulations after all, it was our banking regulations that you claimed that got us through this recession so well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well.
And is this called Basel III?
Basel III. It's
okay,
Basel,
okay.
Switzerland. Basel, Switzerland, okay, Swiss banking, you know, head of the World Bank, blah, blah, blah.
You had not heard of this agreement. Go ahead.
Okay, well, they've had Basel I, Basel II, Basel III, but Basel III really puts us in the hands of foreigners.
Well,
now, what's real interesting is that Harper, and this video is still on YouTube, okay, it's still there to be watched, and if you go to YouTube and enter in their search bar, Harper plus loss of sovereignty, this video will pop up. And he says, when questioned about why did you give up our banking sovereignty, he says, well, I know some people don't like it, and it is a loss of sovereignty, but it's a simple reality of life.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
So at the same time as bragging about our bank regulations, he gives them away.
Yeah.
So he's come right out and said, we don't have our banking sovereignty. So what good is it, members of Canadian Action Party, to try and get the Bank of Canada to fulfill a role it no longer can?
Yeah, no, yeah, there has to be more fundamental change somehow.
Well,
I want to quote here just from Paul Hellyer's book. Where he wrote a book called Goodbye Canada.
Yes, Goodbye
and,
Canada.
And he's quoting David Rockefeller. And Rockefeller, he says, the supranational sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national auto-determination practiced in past centuries.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what's happened,
yeah.
Is that these elites have hijacked our governments, and our governments have colluded with them. I mean, it's really criminal racketeering. They've all committed treasonous acts, and now they've involved us in criminal war, so they're guilty of war crimes as well as treason. So, it's like a fait accompli. It's like he's Harper's, and that sounds like his saying, "Live with it." You know, it's done. It's so outrageous. And we have such a sleeping population, and we have a completely criminally lying media.
They're not only oblivious and sleeping, they're oblivious to the fact that they are sleeping. They think because they get up in the morning, drink their orange juice, eat their eggs, and go toddling off to work as normal, they think they're actually awake, when in fact they'd probably rather say, "I'd rather be at home in bed," okay, than doing all this. But they don't think they're asleep. They think they're awake. And what they don't realize is when we say awake, we mean awake to the truth, awake to information that isn't being fed to them by normal channels. Somebody digging, in fact, to the back of the fridge to see what's in there.
Yeah.
You know, instead of grabbing the first sandwich they spot, digging to see what's in there that might be more palatable, or digging to find out where that rotten smell is coming from.
You know, I mean, the media has just been so massively effective in deceiving the Canadian public, and the Canadians don't realize that these people bought out all the major TV, radio stations, newspapers, magazines, took over publishing, took over textbook publishing, and this has been done through decades.
Took over the universities, took over the education system. Everything has been usurped. Everything.
Isn't that shocking, Dee, that there's so few university professors who are kind of speaking the truth in any area about what's being done? Like, you have the isolated figures like Anthony Hall in the University of Lethbridge.
Christopher, let me make a point to you.
Okay.
How many, you come from the college professor area.
Background,
This is where you've been for a lot of your life, okay? Now you tell me how many actual people who know what you and I know and what a whole lot more of them know, how could they live with themselves sitting there spewing elitist garbage to students? How could they swallow that? This is why the ones who are left are the way they are. It's because they are the ones who will comply. They're the ones who will say, "I don't care how whether you come out of here thinking or not." Those are the ones.
Yeah, they weeded out.
Yeah,
like I was weeded out of.
Weeded out advertising because I saw what it was. You were weeded for whatever reason on your own. But the bottom line is, all truth seekers, all truth tellers, they try to shut up.
Yeah.
Okay, and back to Schopenhauer again. First truth is ridiculed, then it's violently opposed, and then it's accepted as though it always was.
Yeah, so it was self-evident or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is craziness. But people they're oblivious to the fact that they need to wake up. And then when you say to them, "You need to wake up," they go, "Huh? I'm awake. I'm looking at you. I'm awake."
Yeah.
"No, I don't mean that kind. Well, what the hell are you talking about?" And then it's like, "Oh, well, lost that one." And you just don't, after a while, you just don't bother.
And it is, in a way, it's overwhelming to wake up. And I often say that one has to have courage. Like, you have to, like, have courage to face it, because it's like it's so monstrous.
You know,
most people can't face it. It's so monstrous. Like, I tell people about, like, they're spraying you. I'll go outside when they're spraying chemtrails, and I'll point them out to people and try to explain it to them. And it's like some people, they just, and they just go off, and it's like they can't grasp it. There's something lacking in there. It's like people are deadened in a certain way. Like if I learned that I'm being sprayed with chemicals, and I thought that was true, like I would have to seek it out and like learn, is this true? I couldn't just, oh, okay, have a nice day. Are you going to the game tonight? Like go on as though life is normal. Like it's not normal. You know, it's like in your communities, all the elder people are getting Alzheimer's and other mental degenerative disorders.
Yeah.
You know, and people don't realize they've been spraying you with particulate aluminum for 15 years.
At the same time as Monsanto is developing plants that are aluminum tolerant.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, it all fits together. It's,
oh, well, yeah, I mean, it's all a case of, like, are you nuts? You can't see that? It's like, it's so obvious to me now. I look at anything the government puts out and I see through it in a hot second.
Yeah.
Because once you recognize there's something to see,
you're
going to look. And quite frankly, the guys who set all this up, they're not all brain trusts.
No.
They really are not brain trusts. And they see some tremendously stupid things.
Yeah.
But if you pay attention, that's the thing that's required. That's the only thing that's required. You don't need to be a genius to figure this stuff out. It's right in front of you. And it's designed to keep the stupid masses, the stupid cattle. Okay?
Yeah.
We think like cattle, well, because they taught us how to think, but you know what? We can unteach ourselves how to think.
And that's been the effect of the internet. I mean, at least this is what's kind of changed the game a bit, the growth of the truth movement through the internet.
You're going to love this one. Got an article in yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And what does it say? Corporate media are all struggling to stay financially afloat while alternative media blossoms.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
Well, that's exactly what's going on. Why? Well, I hate to tell these buggers, but you know what? When you say such stupid things and your broadcasters look like bobblehead dolls,
isn't that funny?
You're supposed to listen to some blonde because she's sitting at that desk. She must know it all, you know, or some guy who's sitting there trying to look serious in a suit, and they're supposed to know it all, and yet you look at them and they repeat the same words. Every station says the same thing all the time. These people don't think for themselves. Why would you listen to them in the first place? Why would you? We used to say, I remember in the 50s, my parents used to say, well, you believe everything you read in the paper? Right?
Yeah.
And, of course, now it's, you believe everything you see on TV?
Yeah. And then the people say the same thing about the internet as a disinfo. They say, do you believe everything you see on the internet?
Absolutely.
Which, of course, you can't do. You have to be discriminating still. But at least there's a chance on the internet, whereas you don't get the truth on the mainstream.
Yeah, well, my answer to that is no, any more than I believe everything in the newspaper or everything in anybody's book.
Yeah.
I don't believe anything just because somebody else says it. Nothing.
That's so funny when you describe the bobbleheads, because a couple of weeks ago I was watching a bit on CNN where they had four experts, and I had that in mind, the bobbleheads, and I could just see how they all had these bobbleheads, not only when they were speaking, but when other people were speaking, and I just saw it like that. It was so funny. I could just, bobbleheads.
Exactly.
All their experts. Like, people don't realize that they, you know, you've had all these philanthropic organizations, these think tanks and associations who've developed all these
guys,
deceivers.
Half these guys, I wouldn't want them running the elevator I was on. Okay?
No, I wouldn't either.
This is what I will quote you exactly. This is a quote from Buddha. This is exactly how I have come to find is the best way to be these days. And he says, believe nothing just because a so-called wise person said it.
Mm-hmm.
Believe nothing just because a belief is generally held. Believe nothing just because it is said in ancient books. Believe nothing just because it is said to be of divine origin. Believe nothing just because someone else believes it. believe only what you yourself test and judge to be true.
That's interesting, because when I began studying the Fourth Way teaching by Uspensky, I was very deeply affected when he said, this is not a belief system. And in fact, if you believe it, it even undermines your efforts, because, you know, you don't want belief. You have to have direct experience of things.
Yes,
so belief
and you also have to, and you also have to have critical thought.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm of the mind that mankind was given two gifts, okay? We were given the ability to perceive truth from lie and the ability to choose what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with those two tools alone, okay, we can live a really good life. With those two tools alone.
Well, if they were fostered in people, but I mean, in a way, people are victims.
Right, yeah, I mean, obviously that's the condition of it, but like I
said,
we could live perfect lives. We have every tool that we need to live perfect lives. And we need no government intervention. We need no nanny state. What we need is the consciousness to know that if you do harm to anything in this universe, you harm yourself.
Yeah.
You harm yourself because we generally hold. I mean, you must have seen this in your meanderings through spirituality. I know you have. That, you know, most people have a philosophy that we're all one.
Yes, that's throughout the different mystical teachings.
Yeah, at some level, we're all one.
And religions,
Yes, at some level, we are all one, and all of us have that general principle in mind. So if that's the case, how much sense does it make just to recognize that what you put out, you get back, and if you wish harm on anyone, you're going to get it back to yourself, and who on earth wants harm to themselves?
Well, I think among the elites, they don't have that feeling that all is one.
Of course,
in fact,
not.
Exactly, because it's the damaged nature of their hearts.
Well, here's what's interesting to me on that exact point. Okay, it says in the Protocols of Zion, if they ever discover the one, we are finished.
Really? Well,
yes.
Very
it says
interesting.
That right in the Protocols of Zion, that if we ever discover, we the Goyim, as they refer to us, okay, whoever wrote it, for whatever purpose, but the book exists, and that's what it says. It says, if they ever discover the one, we are finished.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, okay, so you do know you're not superior. And in other words, what you've done is you've made a construct out of yourselves in order to provide yourself with a false deity, like deify themselves, right? They're like gods to us, useless eaters, us sheeple. We are their livestock. Well, they had to promote that one. So who's under more mind control, them or us?
Well, I think they are. I mean, I think people brought up within the elite's family undergo
mind control.
Especially degenerative forms of conditioning through emotionally, because I see them mostly as emotionally damaged.
They're totally
narcissistically based, egomaniacs.
Yep.
And they have no feelings, and they contract about the heart, so they don't have that feeling of oneness. For them, they live what Martin Buber would say is an I-it relationship instead of an I-thou. Because they regard others as objects to be used and deceived and so on. They don't
Even
have
their
that.
Their own families.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They trade their kids like playing cards.
Yeah, and their wives, too. I mean, some of the elites, I mean, their wives have been used to, you know, loaned out and lent out and used to, you know, entrap people and bring them into their circles and so on. I mean, it's astonishing. It's a very weird psychology underlying the elite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Foreign to most people.
Look how they get you. They get you into a state where you actually think in an insular fashion. You think in a localized fashion. Okay?
Mm-hmm,
And what they've done is, I look at the United States now. If this isn't a banana peel on the next on the street next to a grave. I don't know what is, because America has its foot on the banana peel right now, as far as I'm concerned. And a lot of people are probably going to get mad at me because I say this, but you need to look at the facts here, okay? I know Ron Paul looks like a real good guy, and I know that he's talking about restoration of constitutional rule and the rule of law, but he's also a proponent of free trade. And people are talking about Ron Paul being able to restore the Constitution, and I hark back to the conversation we had a little earlier where we were discussing domestic law and international law superseding domestic law, and that since constitutions are domestic law, they too are superseded, and I ask people to ask themselves, what in the flying blue blazes do you expect him to restore?
Well,
we're
grasping for straws. I mean, Ron Paul, I mean, you do see his consistency of message through 30 years. You do, and he is of a different class than these other fools that they put forward.
But you see, the only reason they've allowed him, you know they get rid of their enemies.
Yeah.
And you know they do it with great efficiency. And you know that they have the methods to make these people disappear or die of heart attacks or get cancer.
Or they can just kill them in public like Kennedy. They shoot him ten times in public and just tell a story, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And
they
the
can
bigger
do anything,
the lie,
really.
The faster we absorb it, you know.
Yeah.
This is the stupid part. But here we are in a situation, and I'm going to myself, why hasn't somebody popped him off already?
Mm-hmm.
Because up here, if a guy went against his own caucus, what would happen to him? If he went against his own caucus consistently and annoyingly and publicly over and over and over again for years, what would you do with him?
Well, they'd try to marginalize him or kick him out.
Him out of caucus at his first offense.
Yeah.
Is what they'd do to protect their little herd. Well, why didn't the Republicans kick him out? Why didn't they get rid of him when he was so clearly causing all these problems? Why didn't they? That set my head to thinking, because I've been in a lot of back rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've met a lot of these people. Senator Mitch McConnell, Senator John Glenn, President Bush I. All these people. I met Oliver North, for God's sake. All these different people I've met and I've seen in action, and I watched while a press conference held in the White House press briefing room just disappeared as though it never existed 3 hours later because of a lobby. I watched that happen. I've watched all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, holy smokes. If people had any idea whatsoever of what the real deal is behind the scenes in these government offices, they would revolt so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just such massive public deception. It reminds me of the first Bush saying to a reporter that if the people of the United States really knew what we had done, they would be chasing
us
down
us
the street
to
hang
to
us.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
that would
be true, because what we see really is that the series of presidents have been serial mass murderers.
Okay, so now I say
war crimes around the world.
Say to you, I have a few questions. How did Ron Paul survive with all this anti-government stuff he's been spouting for all this time right in the House of the Congress? How did he get away with that, for starters? How did he survive politically when the climate he was creating was so antithetical to what their party was about? How did he do that?
It is a complex question. I'm not sure it necessarily follows that he's just being set up by them.
Let me put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
After seeing all of the crimes that you were just referencing yourself, would you put it past them?
No. No.
Exactly.
No, because they do think decades ahead like that.
That's right.
I know.
Here's the thing that really worries me. The man is a free trade advocate. Free trade takes your sovereignty. If he is such a constitutionalist, why doesn't he know that, and why isn't he screaming about it?
Well,
Why isn't he? I am.
Well, because
I'm not a president. I'm screaming about it. My Canada's gone. What the hell? This man's talking about restoring a constitution that these people overseas have stolen.
And he also talks about bringing American troops home from around the world because America doesn't need to police the world. I mean, that's a huge thing. And I remember the last time he ran, he talked about disbanding the CIA. Same thing Kennedy had said.
Yeah, well, it's going to be real interesting to see what happens in this election, if in fact there is one, because they could suspend one.
Yeah.
And you know that the Department of Homeland Security just bought, get this, 450 million 40
bullets.
Caliber hollow point bullets. Hollow points, as we all know from watching TV, are meant for one purpose, that's to kill.
And for domestic use. This is for domestic use.
Yes, and who the hell are they going to point those guns at?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. Now, I'm saying all this stuff about Ron Paul. What happens when Ron Paul loses? Because you know it's going to be engineered. They're not going to let him win. They're not going to let him.
No.
Okay, so what happens when he loses? What happens when the known Satanist Newt Gingrich or somebody like that takes the throne in the United States? What happens? Okay, it's going to be real interesting because now, whatever the people do, 450 million rounds and 175 million rifle rounds.
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking 22s here.
Yeah.
We're not talking Derringers. We're talking 40 caliber rounds.
Yeah.
Hollow points.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, we're
and
in a critical time.
It's worse. Now, Americans who are listening need to be very aware of this, that if the United States signs and agrees to the UN Small Arms Treaty, no matter what your constitution says about the right to bear arms, it's gone, people.
Yeah, it's the same principle.
By international decree, not because of your constitution. You don't have a constitution. We don't have a constitution.
Yeah.
It's overridden by these trade agreements. And this is what people do not understand. They don't know how they're going to do it. They ignore the world government platform because they don't know how they're going to do it. This is how they're going to do it. Add it up. Add up the dots yourself. You don't need me to educate you.
Yeah.
Add up the dots yourself. They don't need us, Christopher. They've got brains. That's why they're listening. Okay? That's why they're listening. They've got open eyes. They're at least willing to absorb information from even spurious sources like ourselves. Right? So the thing is, at this point in time, the people are going to have to empower themselves, like Buddha said. Test it. Find it to be true or not. Then believe it. Don't believe it because anybody says so. Get up off your duff. The couch is on fire. You can sit there and burn your butt all you want. But I would suggest getting up before you get singed.
And the, another thing is I think people from all different backgrounds are waking up to the crimes of the governments because there's so many issues coming on the table, and then people are beginning to put it together in a broader way.
Well, they're getting smart now. Yeah. They're starting to connect dots they never would have connected
before. Yeah. So there's some signs of hopefulness at times, like, you know, that some states are showing resistance to federal initiatives. And I don't see much sign of hope in Canada. You brought up earlier the new leader of the NDP, and he seemed obviously the choice of the elites, and it's like the last hope for the NDP party. I think it was really a shame.
Well, I'm expecting one day to spot some kind of umbilical cord tied between him and Harper because Harper's got the same attitude towards Israel. And I find all of that extremely funny coming from a Reformed Christian Alliance member. You know, I mean, come on. This is so antithetical to what any of us regard as freedom. It's so antithetical to anything that used to represent Canada and what Canada meant to us.
And to Christianity. I mean, it's horrible, what the degradation of Christianity and of Judaism. Like, I mean, if you look at the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament, and You know, it's one of the things commands is thou shalt not kill. And you just see like the open defilement of that command, like it means nothing.
Do you know some of the most spiritual people I've ever met, and some of the loveliest people I've ever met, are elderly Jewish people who just practice their religion the way it's supposed to be practiced.
Yeah.
Okay. There's none of this Zionism crap
being foisted
on them, and they will sit there and they exude compassion and kindness and love. They exude it. Where are these people?
I know.
Where are they? They're wonderful people. They're wonderful spiritual examples to all of us, and it's not an issue of Jewish faith or Christian faith or Muslim faith. It's an issue, bear in mind, that the ones that we all consider to be the kindest and the most compassionate are the ones who hark back to harmlessness.
I mean, the Jewish people have had their religion hijacked, just as have Christians.
Falsely created in the first place. All of these things were falsely set up to set up individuals as mediators between people and their God. Now, if we're all one and all part of God, then what on earth does a drop of water in the ocean need as a mediator to talk to the ocean? If you're a drop of water in the sea, what do you need a go-between for?
Yeah, exactly.
It's sort of like I got to talk to my babysitter to talk to my father. I don't think so.
Wow, we filled our 2 hours pretty easily, Dee. We didn't even open up the lines for guests, which we had thought of doing. But I knew if you and I get talking here, we could fill in many hours.
Christopher, we've done it in a cafe with nobody listening.
right.
And it's hard to get out of the damn restaurant after because, you know, there's no place you want to stop. There's so much.
Yeah.
And it all harks back to the same thing. If we want to live on this planet, if we want to live with each other in peace, we have to embrace harmlessness. We must embrace harmlessness towards all things, towards the earth, towards our children, towards our neighbors, towards our international neighbors, towards everyone. Because if we're part of the same thing, we harm anything, we harm ourselves.
Yeah,
and that's
very
the plain,
nice.
Simple
Beautiful.
Philosophy. If we all took that to heart, and we all basically agree with it anyway, so what's so hard here?
Well, I don't think the elites feel with it because of their damaged hearts, and that's partly how I...
You know what? There was that, and I'll just say this and let you close the show. But
we have to finish up, Dee.
Yes, Cheney got a new heart, right?
Okay.
Well, everybody, the comments were hilarious. They really were. I mean, they're nasty, but they're hilarious. I said, all hearts atrophy when disconnected from the brain, so it's just a matter of time.
Andy, we are at the end of our show, so we do need to close down. Dee, give out your website quickly, Dee.
www.thenhf.com is where you will find my organization and all kinds of really great health information.
Okay, thanks, Dee, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
And listeners, my website's at zeropoint.ca. Please watch my video on the chemtrail poisoning of the citizens of Ottawa. And my 1137 book attempts to give a broad overview of the world situation, some of the things Dee and I have talked about today. Okay, thank you, BBS. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Take care, keep heart. Let's have the courage, and God bless.